Senate Resources to order. Time now is 3:50. We have Senator Stevens, Huggins, Wilikowski, and Wagner for a quorum. We have four items before us today. House Bill 229, Kenai Gasification Project Railroad Bond, SCR 6, Opposed Wilderness Designation of Anwar, 152, Established Renewable Energy Fund and Account, and finally, House Bill 220, Prohibit Computer-Assisted Hunting. So with that, we will start out with House Bill 229, the Gasification Railroad Bond, and we have with us Ms. Lainey Snyder from Representative Chenault's office. And Lainey, if you'll put yourself on the record, the same with yourself, and here we go.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, Lainey Snyder, staff to Representative Mike Chenault. As many of you know, Agrium owns and operates an ammonia and urea complex in the Kenai area, and it's been at risk for some time now for being shut down permanently. Right now, they're down to a portion of the year in operation. And to combat the risk of shutting down the plant permanently,
slide your microphone a little closer so we can hear you.
To combat the risk of shutting down the plant permanently, the Agrium Kenai Gasification Project has been in development. This project would bring coal from Healy to Kenai, where low emission coal gasification and electricity generation plants would be built. House Bill 229 will authorize the Alaska Railroad Corporation to issue up to $2.9 billion in tax-exempt bonds to finance a portion of the project. The project will also generate electricity for South Central Alaska, help too. It will generate excess carbon dioxide that could be used to improve oil recovery from the wells in Cook Inlet, and will continue to supply fertilizer to Alaska. Payment of debt service for facilities and equipment that would not be owned by ARRC would be provided through a long-term contract or other agreement between ARRC and the project's owner or operator. There would be no fiscal impact to the state, and the sponsor would appreciate your support of this bill. If you have any questions, Lisa Parker from Agrium's here. We also have representatives from the railroad on the phone.
Okay. Has there been any resistance to this project or the bonding implication to the bill thus far?
Mr. Chairman, there has not been. I have not heard anything through our office. I don't know if our communication has been pretty good here. I don't believe that we've had any opposition to this.
Okay. And Lisa, if you would put yourself on the record and just give us an overview of the concept so we're all on a level playing field about where we're going forward, what we're asking for. We can see the round numbers and all the zeros, so
yes.
Give us a concept.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lisa Parker, and I'm Manager of Government Relations for Agrium U.S., based in Kenai, Alaska. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 229 as amended by the House. The concept that is embedded from Agrium's standpoint with coal gasification, as the sponsor has identified, is we would take coal from Healy, transport it by to a port facility, transport it by barge to our facility, where we would then gasify the coal. We would use part of the coal, and we're talking 3 million tons of coal per year that we would be utilizing. Part of that would be used for creating the hydrogen that we need to make anhydrous ammonia. Part of that coal would be used for generating power. For the complex that we are envisioning, we will need 190, we're looking at 190 megawatts of power generation. 120 of that we will use at our facility for the gasifier air separation unit in our complex. 70 megawatts would be put into the grid, into the existing transmission lines, without having to upgrade the transmission lines. Homer Electric Association is taking the lead on the power generation side. With the concept that we're looking at, as was indicated, our plant has been operating at 50% for half of the year. We are just getting the plant back up and running now. We'll operate until October of this year. We want to bring this billion-dollar-plus facility back to full operation. Using coal, gasifying that, getting the hydrogen from the air separation unit, the nitrogen that we need to make ammonia, and then eventually urea, we can see bringing this plant back to 100%. That would generate, just on the Kenai, approximately 300 jobs between our facility and the gasifier and power plant. You would have jobs for additional jobs with the rail transportation and additional jobs at Healy. So that, Mr. Chairman, is a very brief overview of the project, and would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Quick question, Senator Wagner.
This is a news article I had on my desk too, but the lead story says railroad bonds could bail out Agri-McKenai. Do you not have capacity, if the legislature doesn't pass this bill, to go elsewhere for your funding, Ms. Parker?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wagner, if this bill does not pass, we would then be looking at other avenues for financing the project, yes.
So basically, this is not a bailout. This is a method of financing, one of the methods of financing you're looking at, right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wagner, this is a mechanism that was established in federal law 20-plus years ago to allow the railroad to issue tax-free bonds for economic development projects in Alaska. It provides an opportunity for the railroad to use this tax-free bonding authority. From the state standpoint, there is no state involvement, as was indicated. We're just exploring the opportunity to use a bonding mechanism that's on the books. But you are correct, Senator, it is not a bailout.
Okay. Senator Wilkowski.
If there's a default on the bond, who pays?
Senator Huggins, Senator, if there is a default on the bonds, then it will be Agrium and our equity partners that would be paying on those bonds. The mechanism that is established for issuance of the bonds, and I know that Mr. Gamble is also on the phone, the mechanism that is established is if the legislature gives the railroad the authority to seek tax-free bonds, then before the railroad can go for those, they have to get permission from their board of directors to start to seek those bonds. Then in seeking those bonds, they go to the bond market, and the bond market will then do a very thorough investigation of the railroad, of Agrium, and our equity partners in this process. If they do not feel that us and our equity partners have the resources to pay for those bonds, then bonds would not be. They would not look at issuing those bonds.
If there was a default, then I would assume that the railroad could lose most of its assets or many of its assets. Is that fair to say?
No. But let's go to, we'll refer that question to Mr. Pat Gamble. Pat, are you on?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm on, coming to you from sunny Wichita, Kansas.
Yeah, good. Would you put yourself on the record? Did you hear the previous question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I did.
Yeah, just put yourself on the record, please. And what we would like, answer that question, and then give us, from the railroad's perspective, the logistical infrastructure as applies to the railroad and any offloading facilities, upload facilities, so that we have a better feel from the railroad's perspective, both financially and operationally, what this means to you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Pat Gamble. I'm the President and CEO of Alaska Railroad Corporation. To answer the first question with regard to recourse to the railroad for default of the bonds, for any portion of assets that the railroad would need to purchase on its own, in terms of locomotives and coal cars, that it would use its tax-free bonding, then in that case, that portion, if there were a default, the railroad would be responsible. But for the vast majority of the dollars we're talking about in this particular project, there's no recourse to the state or to the Alaska Railroad Corporation. To answer your second question, Mr. Chairman, in terms of the railroad's participation, it's in two parts. One is the operational part, which would be the movement of the coal to an offload point. And there are two that are being looked at right now. That movement is in the neighborhood of 3 million tons a year, which is significantly more than we have moved in the past. So therefore, part of the tax-free issuance would go to purchase, and we're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 rail cars and probably 9 or 10 locomotives that would go into service full-time to move the product to the chosen port. The second interest in this project is exactly as Ms. Parker had said, and that is to use this tool that the Transfer Act gave to the Alaska Railroad Corporation for economic development, and I think she described it very well, so I won't go into that part, other than to reinforce again the idea that, no, this is absolutely not a bailout, and number two, it is simply a tool, and one that has not been used up to this point in time, that may offer Agrium, as they do their business case, a more advantageous financing for the bulk of the project that they need, and again, with no recourse to Alaska Railroad or to the state.
And Senator Wilkowski has a follow-up.
If Agrium, or yeah, I guess if Agrium is unable to satisfy, I'm assuming there's a default. I mean, this is a huge amount of money. I can't believe that there's absolutely no liability that accrues to the state or to the railroad if there's a default. If Agrium defaults and they can't pay, you're saying that there's just a loss. The railroad doesn't have to pay for it at that point?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct. This tool is pretty unique in terms of the U.S. tax code. And I could get Mr. O'Leary to go into even more detail, and I think he's also on the line. But it is at the top level a unique property that was given to the railroad in the Transfer Act. And from a federal point of view, that uniqueness was maintained in the tax rewrite in 1986. There was a virtual overhaul of the tax code with regard to bonding, and the Alaska Railroad's properties here or attributes here in the Transfer Act were left untouched in that rewrite.
Mr. Chair, I just think this is such a vast amount of money. I would like to hear a little bit more, if that's possible. I know we have a busy schedule, but I would like to hear a little bit more, at least from a tax expert, on how it's possible that the state or the railroad has zero liability for a $2.9 billion bond that we're issuing.
No, I understand. And remember, this will go to finance. Lisa, you want to add anything?
Mr. Chairman, I did want to add, of this $2.9 billion, there are three components that are part of this $2.9 billion. Agrium's portion would be $2 billion. $600 million is designated for the railroad, and then $300 million is designated for a spur line for the Matanuska-Susitna borough. So the $2.9 billion there are partners in that $2.9 billion. And on the tax part, I would defer to a tax expert.
Mr. O'Leary, Mr. Bill O'Leary.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. O'Leary, would you put yourself on the record and maybe just give us about a two-minute burst on the financial aspects of this, as you know it from a railroad's perspective?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bill O'Leary. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Alaska Railroad. And as Pat Gamble and Lisa Parker talked about, this is a very big deal to the Alaska Railroad. In that moving 3 million incremental tons of coal, it would be very significant to us. But with the specific question about recourse to the state or to the Alaska Railroad, this is only an authorization to issue up to $2.9 billion worth of bonds. The actual decision and the mechanics of who would be responsible for repayment of the debt would be, you know, first need to be approved by railroad management, then by the railroad board of directors, and then the ultimate control on this will be the marketplace. And I can assure you that the Alaska Railroad balance sheet could in no way, shape, or form support the issuance of, you know, something in the, I think, with a $1 billion sign on it. And so as a result, the market would define who or how much could be issued and what the repayment source would be. So in the case that we're talking about, there would be a certain amount or a small amount in the grand scheme of things that would be have the railroad as its backstop or paying for it. And again, that would be for the locomotives and rail cars, some infrastructure improvements that we need to support this project. But the vast majority of this would be supported by Agrium or a combination of Agrium and its partners. And that's who the recourse would be. That's who the debt or who would be responsible for repaying that debt. And that would be drawn up in the bond documents themselves.
Question, Senator Wilikowski.
I don't know if this is for this speaker or not, but could we use this $2.9 billion bond to, say, build a spur line from North Slope down to South Central?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, this unique authority that the railroad has is just that very special authority, but it does need to be, we believe, based on the language in the Transfer Act, we believe it has to be tied directly to the railroad and to rail service. So that's why this is such a good project as proposed with the Agrium initiative, in that the Alaska Railroad would be involved. It would be a material piece of business for us, and it's a very material link in the supply chain for Agrium is the use of the railroad.
If there was some sort of tie with connecting, building a port in Mackenzie, and having pipe shipped in through Mackenzie and transported along the Alaska Rail, I suppose we could use that money to fund a gas pipeline, couldn't we? From the North Slope down to South Central to provide energy for all of South Central residents?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, if you recall, I believe in 2003 or 2004, the legislature approved $17 billion worth of railroad bond authorization related to financing the natural gas pipeline, and that authorization is still on.
Right, and I think, Mr. Leary, what Senator Wilikowski is referring to is in the event the spur line existed, it could be reverse haul headed north carrying pipe and other logistical support requirements for pipeline construction. I think that's what you're alluding to.
Yes.
and probably more for Mr. Gamble in this case.
Mr. Chairman, in response to the question, as you rephrased it, absolutely. The reverse haul potential would be excellent from Fort McKenzie up into the interior, and we would certainly hope that the state, as it takes a closer look at the actual engineering of the pipeline, would consider such a move.
Yeah, in my mind, that's one of the underpinnings that makes this attractive, in the sense that it does create a logistical train to be able to support pipeline construction activities. We'd like to go now to Mr. Dave Hansen, who is the Director of Economic Development for Mat-Su Borough. And Dave, could you put yourself on the record? And from Mat-Su Borough's perspective, since it's one of the ports of choice, potentially, just give an overview so the committee understands what the concept is from your perspective. Hello, Mr. Hansen, are you there?
I don't think so either.
Hello, Mr. Hansen, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair, but there is some interference.
Okay, all right, go ahead, we're listening.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Resource Committee, my name is Dave Hansen. I am the Economic Development Director for the Mananuska-Susitna Borough, and I appreciate the opportunity you've given me to testify on HB 229 as amended today. The Mananuska-Susitna Borough strongly supports HB 229 as amended. As has been alluded to in the conversation already, we feel that an extension from the main line down to Port McKenzie would not only greatly enhance the Agrium gasification project for coal transportation to port, but also would provide extensive statewide benefits. Thus, this bill and having that authority for bonding, in addition to helping Agrium, will provide statewide benefits, such as making the development of numerous strategic mineral deposits in the interior more cost-effective and more feasible. It will also can be used, and we have a study that says Port McKenzie would be the best port for this purpose, as a backhaul for pipeline or construction of the gas pipeline. It also would reduce the need to invest up to $250 million in rail crossing improvements in the Wasilla to Anchorage Rail Corridor, and should save Agrium rail transport money in their rail freight costs. Overall, we strongly support HB 229 as amended because it provides significant statewide benefits and a legacy addition to our infrastructure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and I'm happy to try to answer more specifically your questions.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Hansen. If you would please stand by, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hansen, maybe I've heard this before, but I see the importance, certainly, of providing electricity to the Agrium plant and the jobs that are there and all of that is very important. But would there be an ability here to provide electricity beyond the needs of the Agrium plant? Is that in your plan, in the plans, or have we even talked about that?
Well, I think there are two parts to the answer. One, I think Lisa Parker would have to answer, and that is the actual electric generation at the Agrium plant that is part of the gasification. However, I can answer that by putting a rail line to Port McKenzie, you make the possibility of electric generation through the use of coal as a fuel very feasible in that area that could be put on the mainline system, the grid, as an additional possibility beyond the Agrium gasification project.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. I appreciate that answer, and that's a pretty interesting potential there.
Yeah, and if we could have Lisa Parker please expound on that as it applies from Agrium's perspective of any surplus that you might generate.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stevens, as I mentioned earlier, our current design on our power plant would be to design it for 190 megawatts of power. 120 of that we would purchase at Agrium, and then 70 would be available for distribution on the grid.
Okay. Other questions on that particular piece? Let's go now, if seeing none, to Mr. Scott Hammond. Mr. Hammond?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity I have to testify today to the Senate Resources Committee. And my name is Scott Hammond. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I live in Kenai now. And I just want to say that I think this is a great bill. And it's not just good for the Kenai. It's not just good for Agrium. It is indeed good for the whole state. We're building a lot of infrastructure here that's going to go far into the future to supply electricity, moving materials. I just can't think of a downside to this bill. And if the state's not at any risk, we're not pledging our indebtedness. This is just a win-win situation everywhere I look at it, and I strongly urge you to pass this bill out of committee. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hammond. What's your profession? Hello, Mr. Hammond. Hearing none.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Hammond owns a metal fabrication business. Deals a lot with aluminum fabrication and other aspects.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone else here in the room that wanted to speak on House Bill 229? Lanny, would you give us an overview of the bill when it was heard in the other body, that any concerns that any members might have had in relationship to the bonding amount, the concept, Agrium's viability? Could you give us any?
Mr. Chairman, I believe Representative Hawker had some concerns about the bonding. He actually, we had someone from Revenue come in and testify to his concerns, and his questions were answered, and he was okay with the bill. The only other issue that came up was Representative Guerra brought up emissions, things like that, and he offered an amendment on the floor that did not pass. I defer to Lisa. I can't recall any other major concerns with the bill.
Okay. And I think the final thing that committee members need to be refreshed on, you have a couple of decision points at Agrium. Could you just remind us what those are, Lisa?
Thank you, Senator. Yes, we have a number of gates coming up. The first one that will be coming up will be this July, when we will make a decision as to whether or not we will continue to work on this project. We started this project in October 2004 and have been working on it since that time. That decision will be based on the financials, from an engineering standpoint. The engineering has been done, and we're continuing to work on that, but it is something that is feasible. The initial work that we did on the permitting, we did not identify any showstoppers from a permitting standpoint. We will be announcing the selection later this week of the environmental firm that we'll be hiring to work on that project. After July, if the decision is made by our management and our equity partners to continue to proceed with the project, the next gate after that would be in the fall 2008. And that gate would then be as to whether or not we then go into detailed engineering and look at starting procurement on those items that you would need long lead time on.
Right. And then I think 2011 is key to you. Would you mention that to us?
Yeah. Yes, Mr. Chairman. We are looking at if we all the gates open and we go on to the next stage, we would be looking at bringing this project online in late 2011, 2012 timeframe.
Questions about the time frame and milestones? Senator Wagner?
One other thing you want to keep in mind, and I'm not an expert on CO2 and using it for recovery of oil, but some of the people I've talked to have said that in a field such as Swanson River and Cook Inlet, there could be the feasible recovery of an additional 300 million barrels of oil. And you start calculating what the state gets out of that now at the price we're getting per barrel of oil, what we've received, that's a big prize at the end of the project also. That's no guarantees, but that's something to think about.
Okay. Senator Wilkowski.
I think you testified last week or the week before that Agrium would prefer to fuel its plant with natural gas?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, and if everything was equal and there was the supply of natural gas, our preferred alternative would be to utilize natural gas. However, as we are all aware, residents in South Central Alaska, the supply of natural gas is declining. We were shut down 6 months this year because we were unable to get feedstock to run our plant, and we are only operating half of our plant now, so we're operating 25% of the time. That facility. Two other facilities were impacted in South Central, as was the a company that delivers natural gas to Fairbanks, and they were able to work out an arrangement with NSTAR where they were able to get the natural gas from NSTAR to meet the LNG needs in Fairbanks. The other respect with respect to North Slope Gas, we're looking at a time frame of trying to keep our plant operating and bringing this online in the next 5 to 6 years. We don't see North Slope Natural Gas coming online in the next 10 years. From our estimation, we would be lucky. And from a corporate standpoint, our senior management doesn't see being able to keep that facility, you know, operating for the next 10 years at 50% capacity.
How soon do you expect to be gasifying coal under this proposal?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, it would be in 2011 to 2012. And what we have been discussing is we hope to be able to get gas to operate for at least half of our plant for half of the year to bridge us during that time while we're constructing.
Well, I'll just make a comment, Mr. Chair. I think I voiced this sentiment last time we were here, and it was interesting because we had this presentation the same day we had the presentation by NSTAR talking about a proposed a bullet line from the North Slope down at the South Central, which would cost almost about the same as this, actually a little bit less. And my concern was if we have $2.5 or $2.9 billion to spend, to bond, possibly. You really need, for a natural gas pipeline, bullet line into South Central, you need a big anchor tenant, and Agrium is the ideal anchor tenant. And so I think this does, if we go ahead with this project, this does hurt our ability to bring in a natural gas pipeline from the North Slope, because we lose you as an anchor tenant, number one. And I think if we have this opportunity to bond, if I had my preference, I would like to see that bond go towards building a bullet line from the North Slope. Let's figure out a way that we can use the railroad and incorporate the railroad into the building of a spur line. That way, we get you your gas, but we also get gas for the hundreds of thousands, the 71% of South Central and Fairbanks and Kenai residents who use natural gas, whose rates have doubled in the last 5 years. So I'm not very inclined to support this bond. I just don't know that it's the best use of our resources.
Senator Wagner?
I'd like to hear from the railroad on that. I don't think that would fit as far as the railroad's bonding capabilities to use that type of bonding for a pipeline. I think it had to be other bonds or other finances.
Mr. Gamble, did you hear the comment and the question?
It's an interesting question, but really it's one of timing. I think the sense of urgency that Agrium is exhibiting right now is the first order of the day. With a comment about our ability to bond, it's not capped. And so at some point in the future, the idea of a bullet line that would perhaps in some way similar to what we've done with Agrium, link the railroad and the project in such a way that it too would qualify for tax-free bonding, we would be very happy to discuss that. We have in fact discussed on and off the idea of a gas line for the past 4 or 5 years with various companies, and it's certainly feasible. The devil's in the details in terms of making arrangements, much as we have with Agrium, to satisfy the requirement that the project is for railroad purposes, so therefore property or right-of-way or some sort of support or combination of all the above may very well prove to be the right formula at some point in the future. That point, however, is certainly farther down the road than the current concern that Agrium has for its inability to put capacity out of its plant. We'd be very happy to talk with the state or look at that initiative as well, and we can, because as a conduit financer and with this capability we have, we would not be capped and in fact could look at something like that.
Thank you, Mr. Gamble. And let's go now to Mr. Paul Kendall. Mr. Kendall, are you there?
Hello,
Mr. Kendall.
Yes, Mr. Huggins.
Yes, is Charlie Huggins here. Could you put yourself on the record and any affiliation you have, and we have about a minute and 30 seconds for your testimony.
I sure can. Now, is this on 229 or is this on SD-104?
229.
Oh, thank you. Senator, I just left the House to come testify on SD-104, and I heard the lady mention hydrogen. It's the first time I've heard the word hydrogen mentioned. I've been throwing it at you guys for some time now. I just wanted to suggest that you should look at this operation a little bit closer. I'm not endorsing it. What I am suggesting to you is that the future does lie in hydrogen, and I don't have the time to expand on that, but I'd be interested in how much hydrogen they're going to make, and for Campbell, could they contribute to some of that, to some of the hydrogen R&D products there in their community at the same time? And having said that, I'll jump off and let you get on with the business.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Kendall. We appreciate that. Are there other comments or questions on this, on House Bill 229? Senator Stevens?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move House Bill 229 as amended out of committee with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Is there objection?
But just, Mr. Chair, does this go to finance?
I just looked. It does not go to finance. It goes to the Rules Committee.
I would object.
Okay. You want to speak to your objections?
Well, I think I've voiced it. I really do think this needs a finance referral. I would just like to see a little bit more clarification and analysis on how this. I just can't envision how this possibly doesn't put the state or the railroad at risk of losing. I mean, this is $2.9 billion, and for the reasons that I've mentioned previously, I just This is benefiting one industry, which I think is a good industry, and I think the project is not a bad project. I'm just concerned that if I had my way, I would prefer to see this go towards a gas pipeline from the North Slope down the South Central that would provide energy, natural gas for Agrium, and would also provide energy for the residents of South Central, Kenai, Fairbanks, all up and down the rail belt.
Yeah. Well, I guess just in response quickly, there are two or three aspects. Number one, we cannot discount the value of being able to reverse haul to the north in logistical support of any pipeline, if you will. Secondarily, the LNG plant can also be viewed as a potential anchor or a greater demand for natural gas if we got a larger supply, if you will. But you know, I don't think they're mutually exclusive, I guess is my point. So with that, call the roll.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator McGuire? Senator Wilikowski?
No.
Senator Wagner?
Yes.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Stedman?
Senator, yes. And with that, motion carries, or the bill will be moved out of committee to rules. We will take about a 1 minute at ease. Next before us, the Senate Joint Resolution Number 9. It's urging United States Congress to defeat House Resolution 39, title to preserve the Arctic Coast Plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Alaska, as a wilderness in recognition of its extraordinary natural ecosystem and for permanent good of present and future generations of Americans. And with that, today we have Ms. Jody Simpson, who is a stellar staff member of mine. And Jody, would you take it away?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jody Simpson and I am staff Senator Huggins. Before you this afternoon, you have Senate Joint Resolution Number 6. In January 2007, Representatives Edward J. Markey of Massachusetts and Jim Ramstead of Minnesota introduced H.R. 39 as an extension of the Udall-Eisenhower Arctic Wilderness Act, and the resolution was referred to the U.S. House of Resources Committee, and you have a copy of that resolution in your packet. The resolution here before you today addresses that resolution that's in Resources back east. Oil and gas exploration and development of the Arctic coastal plain could result in discoveries that would reduce our nation's future need on imported oil, help balance the nation's trade deficit, and significantly increase the nation's security. You have paperwork in your packet that speaks to the vast economic potential for this project. In 1980, the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA, Congress reserved the right to permit further activities within the coastal plain. At this time, 8.9 million of the 19 million acres of the refuge have already been set aside as wilderness. Current enhancements in technology can be used in a manner that minimizes the area within the refuge that is used for exploration and development while providing the nation with a needed supply of oil and gas. This resolution before you, if adopted, urges the United States Congress to defeat H.R. 39 and therefore allow additional activities within the coastal plain. I did work with a gentleman by the name of Daniel Kish, who works on House Committee and Resources back in Washington, D.C., to draft this language in the amendment, in the resolution before you, and I draw the committee's attention to a series of amendments that were provided by our legal services. Most of them are just housekeeping amendments, but they need to be made through the resolution before you today.
Any questions or comments to Ms. Simpson? Are the amendments? Okay. Hearing no questions or comments at this time, we have multiple people. Jody, just remain there, if you will. Beginning with Fran Maurer. Fran, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, this is Fran Maurer. I can hear you.
Yes, Fran. Would you put yourself on the record, and we'll be proud to hear your testimony on Senate Joint Resolution Number 6.
Great. Thank you, Chairman Huggins. My name is Fran Maurer. I live in Fairbanks, Alaska at 791 Red Pole Lane, 99712. I'm a 36-year resident of Alaska and a graduate of the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. During my time in the state, I've had the opportunity to work as a wildlife biologist on the Arctic Refuge Coastal Plain for some 21 years. And since then, I've made many personal trips there as well. I am opposed to SR6 for the following reasons. The coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge is the most central area of an international ecosystem that is unparalleled in the entire circumpolar region for its wildlife and wilderness values. Indeed, designation of this area as wilderness by the U.S. Congress is actually the right thing to do. With the ever-growing implications of human-induced global warming, now is the time for Alaska to show leadership in the development of clean, renewable energy resources such as wind, geothermal, and tidal, and not to continue as a supplier of oil, which even President Bush admitted we must end our addiction from. Supporting wilderness designation of the Arctic Refuge Coastal Plain would be a positive signal that the state of Alaska properly sees its responsibilities for safeguarding this globally significant natural area, as well as its opportunities to lead the nation and the world in development of clean, renewable energy. It's time for some leadership in Alaska to make the right choices now that will yield great benefits for our children and grandchildren by bequeathing to them this great wild part of Alaska, while at the same time choosing a path that leads toward a clean, renewable energy economy for their future. It's time to seize the moment and change direction before it's too late. Please vote against this SJR6. And thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Maurer. Any questions or comments for Mr. Maurer? Okay, next we will go to Pamela Northern of the Alaska Environmental Center. Pamela, are you there?
Yes, my name is Pamela A. Miller. I'm the Arctic Coordinator for the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. First, I will read a few words that were made by Margaret Mary, who was the first woman graduate of the University of Alaska Fairbanks and very influential in 1960 in getting the Arctic Refuge established. She said to Congress, "I'm testifying as an emotional woman, and I would like to ask you gentlemen, what's wrong with emotion? Beauty is a resource in and of itself. I hope the United States of America is not so rich that she can afford to let these wildernesses pass by, or so poor she cannot afford to keep them. There are important values that we're talking about, and the Arctic Refuge already sustains a prosperous economy of subsistence, hunting and fishing, tourism, and other activities that will be harmed by oil exploration and development. In 1960, when President Eisenhower's administration established the Arctic Refuge, at the same time, 20 million acres of the state of Alaska land were open to oil and gas development, what became Pluto Bay. The state got the lion's share of the balance. And even today, the potential oil that might be found in the Arctic Refuge pales in comparison to that elephant oil. There will be harm from drilling. The Interior Department's environmental impact statement that the congressional drilling bills rely on stated, quote, "the wilderness character of the coastal plain would be irretrievably lost." Quote, "oil and gas development would result in long-term changes to the wilderness environment, wildlife habitat, and native community activities currently existing, resulting instead in an area governed by industrial activities." Do we really trust Exxon, BP, and the others with a wildlife refuge that is so important? After what happened last year with the largest crude oil spill ever in the North Slope field, caused by negligent corrosion and then the BP shutdown, that really, I think, opened the eyes to a lot of Alaskans. Industry's not demonstrated that they can be trusted on environmental health and safety. EPA and other agencies are still pursuing court action, and the pipeline that was corroded is not scheduled to be repaired for at least another year. I'll mention just a couple other things. The National Research Council in 2003 non-cumulative impacts from North Slope development harm the land, birds, caribou, endangered bowhead whale migration, and other wildlife in an Alaska Native culture. The so-called new technology you often hear about 2,000 acres would be affected ignores the fact that there would be pipelines, roads, and other infrastructure throughout the controversial coastal plain area. It wouldn't be in one small, so-called small compact area. I'll conclude with a quote. We've got to get off fossil fuel. I woke up to that quote the other morning. It was said by former Chrysler head Lee Iacocca on the radio. So I think we should think seriously about our future, and we've got exciting things we can do to change direction. And you'll bring that up in your next bill.
Thank you,
which we do before.
Yeah, thank you,
so
Pamela.
So we oppose House Joint Resolution 9.
Yeah, thank you very much, Pamela. Senator Wagner?
Pamela, who did you say you worked for again?
I work for the regional conservation group up here in Fairbanks, Northern Alaska Environmental Center. And I've been in Alaska for about 25 years.
And who funds your group?
We're funded by our members and by grants.
By what?
Grants.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Pamela. Is there anyone here in the room that wants to speak to Joint Resolution Number 6? Okay.
Yeah, I do.
I'm sorry, in your name, please?
My name is Matthew Gilbert.
Matthew, how do you spell your last name?
G-I-L-B-E-R-T.
Okay, and whom do you represent, Matthew?
I represent the Native Village of Vinitai Tribal Government.
Vinitai?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Matthew, we're Vinitai. Prepared. I'm sorry?
Oh, Vinitai Tribal Government, not the village, the Vinitai Tribal Government.
Okay, thank you very much. And if you would, Matthew, limit your testimony to 2 minutes. We'll be proud to hear from you.
Okay, thank you. My name is Matthew Gilbert. I grew up in Alaska. I'm 27 years old. I'm Wichin Athabascan. I shot my first caribou when I was 13. Kind of a rite of passage for us Gwich'in men. And I just want to say that this, I'm opposed to SJR number 9, because I believe that the oil and gas development will detrimentally harm the caribou herd, porcupine caribou herd, which we Gwich'ins rely critically on for our food and subsistence and cultural ways. And we've been fighting this issue for 25 years, and I've been protesting against it since I was 8 years old. I believe it's beating a dead horse, because the country has voted again and again in support of us, and it's been defeated in Congress over and over. And I think this is just distracting us from a real, true economic policy, which is renewable energy, because the fossil fuels are running out, and it's worsening global warming. As the gentleman before me said, there's growing implication that fossil fuel use is fueling global warming. And I believe that more oil and gas coal development will just further the destructive climate that is now impacting Alaska and my community.
Okay.
And I oppose SJR 9, and I encourage you all to.
Okay.
And I'm also in support of the House Bill 150, is it, for renewable energy?
Very good.
152.
Good. Thank you very much, Mr. Dilger. We appreciate your taking the initiative to call in and make your voice heard.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Green.
I just want to clarify, we are talking about SJR 6.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, and getting back to that, we have one amendment which Mrs. Simpson mentioned amendment number one, and it's essentially housekeeping, but the members would just take a look at that. And in three places it changes.
I would move the amendment number one.
Thank you, Senator Green. And essentially, in three places in the bill, it changes the wording House resolution to just HR, and the other one corrects the spelling of ANILCA. So it's just a cleanup piece of that. Questions or comments of members on this resolution? Okay. Do I have a motion?
Move it.
Have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move out Senate Joint Resolution number 6.
Okay. Is there objection? Okay. Hearing none. SJR 6 will move from committee. Thank you very much. And we will take a 30-second recess. Before us is House Bill 152, Renewable Energy Fund, and we have, please put yourself on the record, Representative Bill Thomas, famous American.
Yes. Can we have a motion to move it out?
Hold.
Oh, sorry.
I can live with that.
Please put yourself on the record.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Representative Bill Thomas from District 5. I say it's all the greater part of Alaska outside. I'm here to present HB 152. In 2003, the Alaska Task Force recommended that the state increase development of renewable resources. The high cost of fuel in Alaska has been very difficult for rural Alaskans to even try to prosper. Home heating fuel is high. Gasoline prices have skyrocketed in recent years, leaving some Alaska families continuing to struggle to meet ends meet. And then left up to decide whether they want to eat, have heat, fuel, or health care. And this is a direct impact on Alaska's economy and Alaskans' way of life. This problem promises to rise as the supplies of Alaska's precious non-renewable resources dwindle. With the decline in production in Alaska's oil fields and a prospect for gasoline years away, other sources of energy are imperative. The time has come to seriously explore other renewable sources of energy. Alaska is widely known for its non-renewable resources. However, Alaska also has excellent sources of renewable energy, such as wind, geothermal, solar, and hydro. Many of our communities have already been researching ways to secure cleaner and more cost-efficient energy. These Alaskans need funding to help harness these renewable sources of power. HB 152 establishes a renewable energy fund, which will be administrated by the Alaska Energy Authority, AEA. AEA will take advice from an advisory committee with members appointed by the governor from various utilities, environmental, business, state, native stakeholder groups. The fund will offer both loan and grant options for Alaskans to develop alternative energy projects throughout our state. Should be renewable. These renewable projects will not only move Alaska's communities into the future, but will also assist these completely crippled by the rising cost of fuel by reducing the cost of power in some areas with renewable energy projects. Alaska can become more sufficient. Alaska has been an energy state for decades, and HB 5152 is a logical progression towards developing our inexhaustible energy resources. Alaska's communities have waited long enough and are poised to take control of their future energy needs. We urge your support for this crucial piece of legislation. And we have the sectional that will be given. Do you want to give that?
Mm-hmm. You put yourself on the record, please.
For the record, my name is Sharice Millett. I'm staff to Representative Harris. I have a sectional for the bill. I'll just go through it quickly. Representative Thomas did a great job explaining what the bill does. Section 1 is the legislative findings that Representative Thomas spoke about. Section 2 is that creating an account within the AEA under the Power Project Fund, which is a fund that's already established, and this would just be under the umbrella of that fund. It has two components. It has a grant fund and a loan fund. Section 3 talks about the separation of those two funds. The grant fund consists of gifts, contributions from other sources, federal funds, interest earned on the account, and investments to be managed by the Department of Revenue. The grants will be awarded in consultation with an advisory committee that's created in the bill. They'll also help develop eligibility requirements, adopt regulations, and methodology for allocating the money. Also states that to be eligible for the grants, the project must be a new project and use a renewable energy resource or natural gas. Natural gas is used as a last resort for those communities in rural Alaska that don't have renewable energy sources. And the natural gas project has to benefit a community with a population of 10,000 or less. And the fund, both the loan fund and the grant fund are, the loan fund is a revolving loan fund, so it doesn't deplete itself. And the grant fund we designed as a percentage of market value. So that fund will, once the money is appropriated to it, will also sustain itself. So both aspects of the grant and the loan are sustainable. Our way we designed it is that it will only get an appropriation up to a point where it can sustain itself, so it won't be coming back to the legislature asking for money every year.
Right, and in that respect, there is not a fiscal note. There's not any money allocated. This is an account. Would be the first cousin to the education account, as an example.
This is a framework for the account.
Right. Okay. Questions of members or comments? We have three people online. We will go to Mr. Peter Krimp of AEA. Hello, Mr. Krimp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here in Anchorage to answer a question. I believe Sarah Fisher-Goad with Alaska Energy Authority is in attendance.
Okay, thank you, and if you would just stand by, please, unless there are questions of members of Mr. Krimp at this time. Next, we have Caitlin Higgins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon. For the record, my name is Caitlin Higgins. I am the Acting Executive Director of the Alaska Conservation Alliance, and I'm speaking today on behalf of our Executive Director, Kate Troll, who is currently out of town. The Alaska Conservation Alliance is a statewide umbrella group of over 40 conservation organizations with a combined membership of 38,000 Alaskans. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to come before you to express our strong support for House Bill 152. Blessed with unparalleled renewable energy resources, Alaska has the opportunity to lead America and the world in the development of clean, renewable energy resources. Whether it is through the lens of national security and energy independence, high fossil fuel prices, or new jobs and economic opportunities, now is the time to promote renewable energy development in our state. The Alaska Conservation Alliance would like to thank the sponsors of this excellent proactive measure, as well as the Senate Resource Committee for their support and consideration of the bill. We respectfully urge you to pass HB 152 this year. Thank you again and for your time and consideration.
Yeah, and thank you, Ms. Higgins. You really spell your name H-I-G-G-E-N-S?
H-I-G-G-I-N-S.
Oh, very good. Mine's pretty close, H-U. Mr. William Putnam.
Yes, this is Mr. Chairman, I think. Thank you for allowing me to talk here. My name is Will Putman, and I'm the Acting Forestry Director at Tanana Chiefs Conference here in Fairbanks. Tanana Chiefs is a nonprofit native corporation. We provide a variety of services, about 40 villages scattered around the interior of Alaska. And as such, our primary clients are those village governments and tribal governments out there. And many of the programs at Tanana Chiefs are directed towards kind of trying to maintain or improve the economic and social viability and sustainability of those communities. And in recent years, the increased fossil fuel costs have really made it imperative that renewable and alternative energy sources be more closely examined. And so we would like to fully support HB 152, and we urge its passage. We also urge that ultimately some funding is put in place, you know, to give the funds the ability to do what it's set out to do. Many of the villages we represent, you know, lack resources to be able to pursue some of these options themselves, both in terms of the feasibility studies that I believe there's language in the bill that the grant program addresses itself to those sorts of studies, or some sort of loan program to help them achieve the capital expenditures to be able to put some of these projects in place. Many of our villages are, as a forester, we're concerned or interested very much in bioenergy and biomass resource development, but of course anything that helps out the communities in terms of achieving energy self-sufficiency, we would fully support. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Putnam. And in the room, we have Ms. Sarah Fisher Goad. Are you wanting to testify or just here to answer questions?
Here to answer questions, Mr. Chairman, and I believe your staff has provided some potential amendments.
Yes, we have. And I will, we have one amendment. I will move amendment number one to House Bill 52. Ms. Reese, would you please speak to the amendment?
Sure. It consists of five changes. There's a few that are minor technical changes. I took the first one is on page 1, line 11, just deleting the comma after the word river. It's supposed to be river and stream. The second part of this is page 3, line 9, following the word revenue, insert, which shall be the fiduciary of the fund under AS 3710071, which gives the Department of Revenue the oversight of investing the fund. And number 3 is on page 4, lines 7 and 8. You're changing the word energy to electricity and deleting run on and insert the use of hydrogen from. Number 4 is on page 4, lines 9 and 10. Delete D in its entirety. It's a duplication section. We've already covered that. 5th is on page 5, line 21. It's also the in river stream deletion of the comma, so it reads correct. And those are the amendments.
Okay. Are there objections to the amendments or questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Stevens.
Representative Thomas, I'm just wondering why, what's the rationale for saying 10,000 people are less? You're only eligible if you're under 10,000. I know the clearest answer might be that you don't represent any of the communities that are over 10,000, but I do, and so I just question, why are we saying 10,000?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, we were following the gas pipeline, and we were coming down from Prudhoe Bay to Fairbanks and taking a left and coming down the highway, and there's no communities in between there, and we don't want to encourage people using natural gas. It's the last option. But in that area there, it's been determined, we think, determined there's no river, no wind, and no hydro, so we had to battle just to make sure we could put gas in it, so we thought we'd keep some other communities from using all the gas that we're trying to sell down south. Okay.
A follow-up?
If you find natural gas, we'll be proud of you.
Okay, hearing no objections, amendment number one is approved. Did you meet any resistance or when you people testified? Are there any points that should be brought to the committee's attention?
I think we did a good job on all of them, other than Chairman Huggins. The one point we wanted to make is the Denali Commission is also one of the designees on here. They've been very helpful as it is, and so they're watching to see where this comes out to. And I think we didn't see any resistance. We've had more compliments than resistance on this.
Right. Yeah, and my assumption of those people that did not like the ANWR provision will love this fund, which is something for everybody, right?
Yes. Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, if one of the resolutions we have in regards to ANWR when it comes to the House, we're going to ask that a portion of the royalties be dedicated to renewable energy, and might take some slack off for people who are anti-development.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Good,
as the person
idea.
From...
Excellent idea.
Yeah, so you might watch that as it comes through here.
That's why we like you.
Oh, sure.
Very good.
Okay.
Well done. Well done. With that, Senator Stevens, do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move out House Bill 152 with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
As amended.
As amended.
With that, it's moved on to the next committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, committee.
Thank you, Harris. Thank you so very much.
And next, we will bring robot hunting forward.
Whoa. Robot.
Is there a demo?
Can you shoot those robots? Is that the...
Is there a bad one? One robot per family? I think the record should reflect the sun outside. It's our good mood.
Creating energy.
An indication of...
Representative Buick, what we would like to do in the interest of time, because finance is kicking back off and I've got to go back upstairs and also to listen to a potential makeup of an amendment for your bill, we'd like to get it read across. You give us a 5 minute or less explanation and then we will hold the bill over, for, as I mentioned to you, for Wednesday.
Okay.
And it's the intention of this committee, this chair, to move your bill on Wednesday unless there's extraordinary circumstances. Force majeure.
Committee Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity. Members of the Committee of the Resources, Senate Resources, I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today and talk about something that was brought to my attention recently. I feel is a despicable act. At first I thought it was a joke. I quickly found out it was not. Internet hunting is when a person anywhere in the world can shoot animals from their living rooms by hooking up their computers to a rifle through the internet. The hunter is able to control the aiming and firing of the rifle from the computer keypad and to make a kill with the click of a mouse. This practice began in Texas in 2005 when an entrepreneur offered people the ability to shoot big game on his land via remote control technology. The Texas legislature shut him down. Since then, 26 states have passed legislation to ban this practice, and legislation in 8 other states is currently pending. HB 122 would prohibit this despicable practice in Alaska. As everyone knows, we have some of the best big game in the world in Alaska. We need to ban this practice before it hits. I want to make sure the guys who are doing this don't come up here. HB 220 will do 3 things. First, it would prohibit individuals from engaging in internet hunting in Alaska. Second, it would prohibit anyone from providing services or operating facilities in the state to enable computerized hunting activities.
Let me interrupt you very quick. We have some people online. I'm just going to tell them they will not be able to testify, so they aren't standing by.
Okay.
And Matt, the same for yourself, and thank you very much for coming today. But with that, Lieutenant Burt Waldron and Joe Lutch, today we are not going to be able to hear your testimony. We intend to take this bill back up on Wednesday, but didn't want you just standing by there and being frustrated when we gave you that word later on. Can you hear me, Mr. Waldron and Mr. Lutch?
Yes, this is Lieutenant Waldron. I hear you. Do you have a time on Wednesday, sir?
It'll be that we will kick off at 3:30 on Wednesday.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you. Sorry about the timing. Please continue.
Mr. Chair, I would defer the rest of my testimony to Matt Robus, if I could. He does have something that he wants to put on the record. He won't be here Wednesday.
Okay.
So if I could get him up here very quickly and have him talk about the amendment that's proposed briefly.
Right. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. I'll be brief. My name is Matt Robus. I'm the director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation within the Department of Fish and Game. And I actually was coming to testify on this bill to talk about the Section B, which addresses people with disabilities and the Americans with Disabilities Act and so forth, addressing it in a positive way. I was going to be supportive. This afternoon, on the way essentially to the hearing, I became aware of an idea by another party to add on something to the bill through an amendment that would prohibit another type of hunting activity using remote TV cameras for something called electronic patterning. I had a discussion with the executive director of the Alaska Outdoor Council just before coming over in order to try to figure out how that was going to happen, since I was not aware of any language. And I've also talked to the Department of Law this afternoon, and the consensus is that the language to prohibit that type of activity is not simple. It's going to take a while to work out. There's a lot of nuances. And I just bring to the committee's attention that it's the type of activity that usually is prohibited through 5AAC 92.080, which prohibits the use of cell phones and radios and pits and fires and things like that for the taking of wildlife. This electronic patterning seems to be the type of activity that might fit into that. If so, for the committee's information, the Board of Game has a statewide regulatory meeting scheduled for January 08, in which that particular section of the code is open. And so through the public proposal process, that type of language might be hammered out better in that realm than here. And just to close, the executive director of AOC, Mr. Arno, expressed an interest in going in that direction. So that might be a way to deal with that kind of complicated issue.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. And I think what we will do is, as I recall, I think we have a teleconference tomorrow with Mr. Arno, and Bob, we get with you and try to get you dovetailed into that, and we try to get this put to bed. But one way or another, we will move this bill on Wednesday. Okay? All right.
That's basically all I had, Mr. Chairman. If there's any questions of the committee or anybody else, I would be glad to be at your disposal.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good job.
You bet.